Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, this is Debbie Gangeesh with the Pedowitz Group, and welcome to WRMR Revenue Marketer Radio. Today's topic is called Baby Steps to Revenue Marketing. And as you guys know by now, every Thursday at 2 o'clock, we meet to talk to a real revenue marketer and learn tips and tricks on how to make that transition from just plain old traditional marketing to also include revenue marketing. And it's more than just listening. This is an interactive show, so please feel free to call in or chat, and we're happy to include you in the dialogue. Again, this week we're on the road, and we're coming to you live from Baltimore, Maryland, where we're attending a mind-blowing conference that is being put on by Sterling Partners. The room I just left is filled with CEOs and presidents of companies who are spending the next 2 days learning how marketing can help them drive revenue in 2011. We see this whole revenue marketing discussion shifting more and more to the CEO level, and that's just where it needs to be. Now, before I introduce today's guest, I want to take a moment to define the term revenue marketer. Still relatively new in the market, we get a lot of listeners who haven't heard it before. And basically, a revenue marketer has some kind of revenue-related accountability through the kinds of campaigns, communications, and digital interactions they set up. They're responsible for the top of the sales funnel and interacting with and nurturing leads until they are sales ready. And they all use some type of marketing automation platform integrated with CRM to power their revenue marketing practice. So our topics could include anything from metrics to people to compensation to content, but it's all about demand generation strategies and tactics that drive revenue. And the good thing about this show is every revenue marketer has been exactly where you are today, and they're here to share their journeys, their successes, and their gotchas, so your journey to becoming an elite revenue marketer will be quicker and smoother. Now, today I am so pleased to introduce our guest, Jamie Davenport. Jamie's from Atlanta, and she has been in B2B technology for the last 20 years, but she started very young. And she has served in many roles, including customer support, account management, sales engineer and consulting, but the second half of that time really has been focused on marketing. And most recently, working for an early-stage technology company, building effective marketing teams and processes, and really focusing on beginning to grow a revenue marketing practice from the ground up. Jamie, welcome to the show.
Thanks, Debbie. I'm happy to be here.
It is such a pleasure. So why don't you tell us a little bit about New Bridges and just a little bit more about your role there.
Okay. Well, New Bridges is here in Atlanta, Georgia, and we are a data security company, which basically means that we create software solutions that allow merchants and other large companies to protect sensitive data, and most specifically, credit card information. So there are lots of regulations out there today, you see lots of things in the news about privacy of and protection of people's identities. And so what our software does is allows those credit card transactions to be secured and locked away in a vault so that no one can get at that credit card information and possibly misuse it.
I have to tell you, I'm sitting here laughing because you're a security company and you're helping people, ensure that digitally they are protected, and yet you're a demand generation marketer. How do your customers feel about being tracked and monitored?
That's fun.
Do they clear their cookies all the time?
We do have a sophisticated audience, and that is a challenge for us sometimes. We do definitely have to tread lightly and gain their trust, and that's why providing valuable content is really, really important.
Okay, I had to ask that. I just absolutely had to ask that. So, Jamie, your role there clearly is you're running marketing for the organization, and that revenue marketing is absolutely part of that. Mm-hmm. Do you have other marketing responsibilities as well?
Well, I pretty much have all of marketing except for PR. So My team just manages all of the demand generation funnel, whether that is events or web events or the whole email side of things, plus the inside sales organization is part of marketing. And my counterpart, who runs the inside sales team, we both report up to the EVP of sales and marketing. So we have a common executive that's over the sales and marketing organizations.
And how do you think that works for you, reporting to someone who is the EVP for both sales and marketing? Do you think that's a good structure for you for being a revenue marketer?
Yes, I think it is, and I think there's an important thing to you can get lucky and have a sales executive who really understands the value of marketing, and that's not always the case. But we're very, very lucky here in that that our executive does have a background in marketing. He was actually in marketing before he moved over to sales early in his career. And so he has some interest and some appreciation for what marketing can do to help him reach his sales goals. So I think if you have that type of executive, then you can be very successful with this type of structure.
I completely agree. Instead of marketing pushing water up a hill, now there's a real integrated effort between sales and marketing to make an impact on revenue, and you're absolutely right. When you see those key-level executives who both understand it from both a marketing and sales perspective, I think that's such a key ingredient for success.
Mm-hmm.
Now, you also mentioned that you guys also have inside sales, so tell me about that group.
Okay, well, I've been with New Bridges for about a year and a half, and so the group was formed about the same time that I came on board. Its nickname around here is PMC, which is Prospect Management Center, and I think you'll see a lot of other organizations kind of naming their inside sales groups and giving them a little bit of an identity, so people, there's an awareness in the company exactly what they do, and so they are charged with taking everything that comes out of marketing, all of our marketing activities flow next to inside sales once they meet a certain criteria, and their only task in life is to get those folks to a point where we can pass them over to sales, and they have agreed service level agreements between the sales department and the PMC of what constitutes something that is sales ready.
And again, the reason I bring that up is that, again, we're finding in a lot of different organizations, and when I was doing this radio show last year, I don't think I talked to anybody except for one company where marketing actually worked with an inside telequalifying team, mm-hmm. and yet it seems to be popping up a lot lately, and we're seeing that it's inside telequalifying, and we're also seeing that this team reports into marketing and is actually part of the marketing organization. Now, how is that team comped? What kind of metrics are they responsible for achieving, Jamie?
They are compensated on generating those what we call we adopt the demand waterfall methodology that Serious Decisions that has, if people have heard of that company, they have a methodology called the demand waterfall, and so we have something that we call sales accepted lead, and so they are comped on the number of sales accepted leads that they generate every month and then every quarter.
Love that. But I have to ask you a question, and why don't you share with the folks who are listening kind of the basic steps of the Serious Decisions waterfall? Because, in this new industry, it's kind of hard to find standards and benchmarks, and Serious Decisions probably has done more work and the best work of anybody. So why don't you describe what that demand generation waterfall is?
Okay, well, if you can picture a funnel, the sales and marketing funnel, a lot of people, use that as a guide to how leads will flow through your marketing and sales process. And the demand waterfall basically is still a funnel, but they call it a waterfall, and it starts with inquiries. And so the inquiry stage would be anybody that reacts to a marketing program that you put out there. They might download a white paper. They might register or attend a webinar, and they're categorized as an inquiry. The next level for people that then would fall through into the next level would be what they call an MQL or a marketing qualified lead. So a marketing qualified lead would meet some other type of criteria that would be defined by your company. For us, we're looking for certain, you know, certain industries, certain level of title would give somebody more points or higher worth to us, and would move them into that MQL phase. The MQLs then are passed on to our PMC or our Prospect Management Center, and they will follow up with these folks and try to gauge their interest and meet the criteria for a sales lead that we would pass over to sales. So MQLs are passed over once they've met this next level of criteria. They're passed over to sales. Sales then has the ability to accept or reject that lead after they follow up with them. If they're rejected, they go back into our marketing process and stay there until they bubble up again and are worth taking having another conversation with sales. If they are accepted by sales, then they continue through our sales process at that point, hopefully to some kind of closure.
So when they get a sales accepted lead, they have to actually pick up the phone before they turn the MQL into an SAL?
Yes, that's right.
Okay, and then the salesperson, and they say, okay, I'm going to spend some cycle time against this, so they turn it into an SAL, is that right?
Yep, that's right.
Okay, and then at some point it becomes a sales qualified lead or an opportunity, and then the close.
That's right.
Okay, and again, that's a great example of how a company is using the Serious Decisions waterfall. So I'm really glad you could share that with everybody, because I've worked with so many companies that have, oh my gosh, 85 definitions, and it really only means stuff to marketing. It really doesn't mean anything to anyone else. And how long have you guys been using the Serious Decisions waterfall, Jamie?
We actually have only it's been just about a year. I mean, we did have a funnel that was kind of similar to this, but it's really nice to have it in writing and really have it something that we share with the sales organization, and we both work off of the same model.
Absolutely. And, you know, whether or not you have a marketing automation system, having a set of common lead definitions that you can at least agree to how they're going to be worked is the most fundamental thing that you can do to improve that relationship between sales and marketing. So I think that was a really, really good job on that. So you've got the Prospect Management Center. Love that title. And then you run all of marketing, including demand generation. And then you guys both report up as well as the sales team up to an EVP of sales and marketing. So I would imagine that you guys are a pretty cohesive group, Jamie.
Yes, I would say that we are. This is one. I mean, it's not always been that way in my experience at other companies. But we had a little bit of turnover here. So I think one of the opportunities was that since several of us came on within a few months of each other, we were kind of all newbies at the same time, and just kind of formed that chemistry kind of from the beginning.
So what would it be like if you had a wall between you and sales? Do you think you'd be successful?
Oh, absolutely not. And I've certainly been in that situation where it's been that way, and you do feel like you're beating your head against that wall, absolutely.
Okay.
So I do feel like this is I'm very, very lucky to have a supportive sales executive.
So give me an example, like how you guys interact, because, again, a lot of times people that marketing groups who, you know, they're trying to understand, you know, if we're going to be doing revenue marketing and if we're going to be having a tight alignment with sales, what does that look like? I mean, what kind of meetings do you go to? How do you guys share? I mean, do you, like, sit next to one another? Do you, like, go into their weekly meetings? So tell me a little bit about how you build that collaboration between sales and marketing.
Okay, well, there's a couple of things that come to mind. One is that we do attend the Monday morning sales meeting. So the whole marketing team doesn't at this point, but we're talking about bringing more people in into those sales meetings as sales is getting more comfortable with us being there. Sometimes in some companies, it's funny, I've just seen it handled many different ways. Sometimes the sales meetings are very locked down and they don't want anybody in there other than their own members, or it can be just kind of a free-for-all, and sometimes I've seen it where everybody's in the sales meeting and it does become a little diluted because there's just too many outside folks participating and people get off track and it's not as productive. So we're kind of still tweaking that, but I do attend all of the weekly sales meetings, so I know what, so I can hear the challenges and the messages that are resonating and which deals are moving more quickly through the funnel, where people are stalled. And one of the reasons that I make sure that I'm there every week is because there's not only opportunities for us to figure out how to affect what goes into the top of our waterfall, but also if there are places where deals are stalling, is there something that marketing can do to help those further along deals that might be stuck? I mean, is it an ROI calculator? Is there some document that we could put together that would help those guys, progress in those deals? So we're definitely.
I love that.
Yeah.
So, do you have any examples of what you've probably seen maybe in the last few months? Any kind of things that you've done to kind of help unstick deals or anything that you've created that have helped the sales team in those deals that are deeper in the pipeline?
This sounds, and sometimes, you can overanalyze everything when you can't see the forest for the trees and everybody kind of looks at each other and says, we don't have one of those. And that kind of happened a couple of weeks ago where we had a couple of deals that were, people were just kind of, stalling, and we weren't exactly sure why. They were becoming less responsive, where the deal had been moving along fine, and they were starting to just become, less responsive and harder to get in touch with, and it was understandably making the sales reps nervous about the progress of the deal. And what we found out in one of the deals was that there was actually, because New Bridges is a small early stage company, and the company we were trying to sell to is a very large company, and there was actually starting to be some internal pushback from some of the our sponsor in the deals higher ups was asking, who is this New Bridges and why aren't we going with our biggest competitor, who is a very, very large company? And so
it's kind of like you never get fired for hiring IBM.
Exactly, one of those situations. And so as we were talking about it in the sales meeting, he said, I think there's some concerns about us being a small company. And we kind of all looked at each other and said, well, so what do we do now? And we ended up putting together a very quick document that was basically, we call it the Why New Bridges document. But it's not based on our product capabilities so much as our size and the fact that we are a profitable company, what our financial situation is, as well as several quotes from analysts talking about us being leaders in this data security, in this particular slice of data security that we handle, and the leadership of some of our executives who are members of the regulatory councils that are guiding these guidelines for PCI DSS, which is the data security payment card security guidelines. So just all of those items of credibility, we put them on one sheet, and the deal hasn't closed yet, but he did feel like that was something that really, really was helpful to the sponsor to be able to pass up to his executives and say, here's who they are and why you shouldn't be afraid to do business with them.
And again, if you had not been sitting in those monthly meetings, every Monday meetings, and if you had not been listening to and helping them analyze why a deal was getting stuck, you never would have known that. So I think that's a great example. Love that. So clearly one of the things that you guys do is you sit in those meetings and you have interactions around both the top of the funnel and also deals that are all, are opportunities. What else do you do that manifests this cohesive group that you've got?
Well, marketing started putting out, we realized at one point that we had, and I know all marketers are probably in the same boat, where you feel like you have a million plates spinning at once, and you aren't really sure if everybody else has any idea what you're doing. They see you running around doing a ton of things, but what is it? What value is it really bringing? And what is it doing for me in my deals? And so one of the things that we came up with, New Bridges is spelled NU, and so that's kind of our little. It's kind of like McDonald's. Everything is the McCheese and the McRib.
Yeah.
Well, everything around New Bridges is kind of, we're new hires and new newsflash with an NU. So marketing came up with its own news flash, and we have had a lot of fun with it, making little videos and making it kind of goofy. But, you know, salespeople have short attention spans, so these are definitely very, very short little things that that we put together twice a month, and there's always something goofy in there, but there's also the valuable things that we've produced over the last 2 weeks that they can use in their deals. Here's, you know, a new piece of collateral, or we've got these webinars coming up. It's always very, very short and sweet, but the guys are funny because they'll ask us a question, and now they answer their own question. They're like, okay, I know, it's in the news flash. So they know that every
so every
2 weeks they know they're going to get this news flash that has links to everything that we've done and everything that we've, and it's never more than 30 days out. Like I said, it's very short attention span, just the things that are coming up, you know, very, very timely.
So how long does it take you guys to put that together, Jamie?
We've gotten it kind of down to a science where I know there's the drill. I send out the email to my team and I say, you know, newsflash due in 3 days, and they know that they need to send me what's coming out of their area, whether it's events or emails or webinars or whatever, and we just pull all of that together. It probably only takes me an hour to pull it together. Actually, what takes the most time, but is the fun part, is what goofy stuff are we going to put in it? We've had some separated at birth pictures where we'll take a celebrity and pick one of our sales guys that we think look kind of alike, and you know, stick them in there. Or
love that.
Yeah,
love that. That's awesome. So how are you guys using video in that? You said sometimes you do video. Well, how are you using video?
We have a flip camera that is always in my pocket, and you know, it took us a while, and for people out there that have children, my children were actually the ones that probably got me as comfortable with video finally. You know, now that it's down to a tiny little device that you can always have with you, we've just really made it so easy now just to capture people on video. And so it's kind of started to be a little bit of our culture now that around New Bridges, that you never know when the flip's going to come out and you're going to start recording people. So
That's awesome.
This point, we've always used it internally just for fun.
Uh-huh.
We haven't really used it for customers or prospects yet. I'm sure that's where we're going next.
We just did that with a client testimonial this week. Jeff Pedowitz, my partner, was at a client location. And we're going to do these video testimonials. He said, let's just make this thing easy. And he had his flip camera with him. And it was just so easy. And the client loved it. We loved it. And it was, you know, done in like
8 minutes. And it's done. Yeah, exactly.
And it's done. Absolutely. So that's a great idea. That's wonderful. Well, let's kind of go back in history a little bit. And tell me a little bit about how did your revenue marketing journey begin? You know, what kind of systems, and kind of a little bit around what your technology journey was like?
Well, when I started at New Bridges about a year and a half ago, they had been using a legacy CRM system that frankly was really a repository for names, and that's about it. I mean, the salespeople weren't using it to manage their territories. Executives weren't asking for reports from it because nobody trusted the data, and it was really one of the reasons that I was hired, along with my counterpart on the inside sales side, because we had experience with Salesforce.com, and the decision had been made to bring that system into New Bridges. So that had been made when we got here, and that implementation just started about the time that we arrived. So we brought Salesforce.com in. And then we had also at New Bridges, before I arrived, they had actually licensed to bring in Pardot as their marketing automation platform. But because of the state of CRM, they hadn't done anything to try to integrate the two. There was no integration between the two. And frankly, I think the marketing people that were here just really weren't sure how they were going to make it successful given the rest of the state of affairs with the CRM and the quality of the data. So the only thing they were really using it for was creating landing pages. So with Salesforce once Salesforce was put in, that completely changed the game and allowed us to really take advantage of what Pardot's able to do. And so that integration was built, which was very, very easy. It's very easy to set that up. And we expanded the Pardot license so that everyone in marketing and inside sales would have access to that. and trained the inside sales team on it. So that was really the first big step in us putting some metrics and measurement capabilities around the whole marketing process.
Now, you said something interesting, Jamie, and that is one of the reasons that they brought you in is because you already had Salesforce.com experience and, mm-hmm. and it was helpful. And so do you think it's valuable for marketers who are moving toward revenue marketing to have more technology experience in working with applications and especially working with leading CRM platforms? Is that helpful?
Oh, I think it's I absolutely think it's imperative. I think that unfortunately, you know, because everything is technology driven and becoming more and more so in marketing every day, I think that it's going to absolutely be a requirement that you have those kinds of skills if you want to run a marketing team. I don't think that you'll be able to just be an effective marketing leader if you haven't actually been in the trenches and understand what it really takes to run these systems and to get the results from them that you need.
Yep, I completely agree. So you guys brought in Salesforce.com, you guys upgraded Pardot, mm-hmm. and then what happened from there?
Well, we started looking into what Pardot was able to do. Like I said, we were the other bit was also that we had a B2C email platform that was put in, which it was really, really way overkill for a small company like us. We were not sending out nearly the volumes or the sophisticated emails that this platform that we were paying for. We did not need that level of complexity, so it totally made sense to bring our email marketing back within Pardot, which does a fine job for what we needed.
Wait. So you had two systems. One was email, and one was doing landing pages. Okay.
Yeah.
That's interesting.
Yep.
Okay.
So we actually were able to expand our license with Pardot, get rid of the email engine, and still save money and do a much better job. So we started putting some emails out there, and just because, believe it or not, before I got here, there had no emails other than event thank yous and event invitations. Not one marketing email had been sent out in 6 months.
Wow.
So we really had to step back and go, wow, where do we even start? We were kind of starting with just a completely clean slate. So we took some key messages. We had just redone our collateral, and we took some key messages from the collateral and started sending out some basic emails, which prior to that, if I back up a little bit, was taking a look at our data. And our data was really in a shambles because of the lack of rules or validation or really adoption from our previous CRM. So we had to really get some executive commitment to spend some money to get our data up to speed. And it's still not, obviously, that's an ongoing thing that will never be done. It's an ongoing process, but we've made huge, huge strides in terms of fixing duplicates and things like that and brought in some tools to do that.
Jamie, one of the other interviews that we did, I actually interviewed Ed Thompson at Brain Shark in season one and then also in season two. And I always ask her by the end of the show, you know, what's the number one piece of advice? And for Ed, last year it was data, and this year it was data.
Yes.
So clearly having a clean database. So what exactly did you do? Did you buy tools? Did you pay people? How did you clean up that data? Let's get a little bit more concrete on that.
Okay. Well, yes, yes, and yes.
Okay.
Both, you know, I have had, and one of the reasons I think that we were successful here is, once again, going back to that, I know everybody knows that this is the case, but it is so true, and it's that executive support, because we were able to take some money that, you know, frankly, could have been spent on marketing programs, and we told them that, you know, it could be that we're not going to be able to do as many marketing campaigns, but we've got to fix this data first. And they understood the value in doing that. So we brought in demand tools to help us with data quality, and that it's an AppExchange partner with Salesforce.com, and they have people import. They have Dupe Blocker, and I can't remember the third tool, but we have three tools from CRM Fusion is the name of the company, and that was put in with the help of a company called Configuro, which is a local company here in Atlanta.
Yeah.
And they actually came in to help us with that whole data process and getting that you know, getting that squared away. So we put demand tools in, and that eliminated just, it was kind of scary, the number of duplicates that we had. So we got that cleaned up.
Do you mind asking how large is your database that you were working with?
To start with, it was about 180,000 names, which for a really small company, that's a pretty big database.
Mm-hmm.
But we realized that lists had been bought over the last 4 or 5 years and had just been thrown into this database. And we cleaned some of it out when we went live on Salesforce.com when we did the migration to Salesforce. But, you know, of course, people are so scared to delete anything. And so we did end up having to bring over a lot of the data from the old system. And then, of course, it costs you more money because you've got to pay to clean it up. So,
okay. But
that's how it worked. So so we have a lot of metrics now on how our database is down closer to 100,000 now, and we still don't think we know it's still not where we want it to be. But frankly, if you are missing information on people, you really can't even judge whether you should keep them or not. So we have people that either it's a company that we don't want, you know, we don't want to get rid of it because we like the company that they're with, but we don't know what their title is or whatever. We're still missing, you know, some data.
Love it. Love it. And again, what a concrete example, because everybody always talks about, okay, you got to start with clean data. Okay, well, tell me how I can get clean data. So I think that's a good example. And the tool that you use is called Demand Tools.
That's right. Yep.
Okay, good. All right, so you got that data cleaned up.
Yep, as much as we could. And so then from there, we started just sending out some basic content-rich emails that talked about the problems that data security professionals are facing in terms of trying to become compliant with all of these regulations. And lucky for us at the time, TJ Maxx had just had the big data breach that some people might have heard of, where a whole bunch of credit cards were stolen. So that kind of helped us get some awareness, I believe, because that was really in the headlines when we were starting a lot of this. And so we started looking to see what people were reacting to. And the way that we protect credit card data is through a process called tokenization. And what I think happens a lot of times, you're inside this niche that you're going after, and tokenization makes total sense to you because you're talking about it every day. But what we realized was that in a lot of the pay-per-click campaigns that we had done, tokenization was a word that we were buying, and we were just getting nobody was clicking on it because nobody knew what it meant. It did, or the people that were clicking on it were looking at it for something completely different. So we realized that we had to change how we thought people would find us. How would they be searching for a capability like we provide? And so we started trying some other terms like secure credit cards, secure payment data, and things like that. And our pay-per-click started to go up. And so we just changed our subject lines and the content of the emails slightly to quit using the technical term tokenization and just talking in a little bit more plain English in the emails. And we saw, you know, that responded much better.
I love that idea. And people always ask, how can you use search and demand generation together? And what a great example of that. Find out what people are searching on, what are the top keywords they use when they've got a problem that you can address, and then make sure your subject line and your content is structured around that versus always being so internally focused and thinking about, well, this is what we talk about, so clearly everybody knows what that is. What a great idea. Do you remember what kind of improvements you got in either email opens or click-throughs once you guys adjusted that?
I don't have the specific improvement. I know some rough numbers. I do know that the first email that we sent out where we offered a brand new white paper that talked about this specific topic and not using the word tokenization, but 6 ways to improve your data security, that we had about 1,100 people download that white paper, and that just completely blew away anything that we had ever had at this company ever.
So being a small company,
that was a huge, and we just, you know, at that point we just didn't have the metrics in place yet, but we're going to get there. We're much, much closer to being able to do that now.
Okay, that is outstanding. And you, I would imagine that you continue to take a look at what's coming up in SEARCH and,
oh,
and
sure.
just want to make sure that everything's in line with that. Okay.
Yep.
All right.
Yep.
Excellent. Okay. So you cleaned up your data, and then you began to put out some content-rich email. So let's talk about content for a minute. When you say content-rich, what do you mean, and what kind of impact do you think that has on your demand generation marketing efforts?
Well, and I know everybody sees this so much now, but it really, really is true, because every once in a while we'll decide to cheat and we'll send, because we don't have the content that we really want to have, and, or we're on a quick deadline and somebody somewhere says we have to get this out, you know, by a certain time, and we might send out something that's a little bit more promotional. And you can immediately see the difference in the response level, because people just they just don't, you know, they're so much smarter these days, and they just really are looking for information that has value. So we went through, at the same time that a lot of this system stuff was going on, we were also going through a remessaging exercise, and we had just developed a new set of collateral, and as part
oh my
of that
gosh,
collateral,
is there anything that you guys haven't done in the last year and a half?
It's
you have a new
pretty
website
crazy.
Too?
yeah. As a matter of fact, we do not, but we are almost ready to launch.
Okay.
As a matter of fact, like in 2 weeks, we're going to have a new website. So we have had that going on as well, but not we got the messaging down first. So we've got these key messages. We call them thumbnails around here, and it's basically a key message matrix for each of our product suites. And so we go every time that we write something, we have to go back to that. And I think it's allowed our messaging to be pretty consistent with the points that we're constantly driving home.
So how large is the matrix?
Each one is about 2 pages long. So not too, I mean, we really want it to be concise and pretty, pretty clear and concise, not overcomplicated. So it's bullet points, it's literally just a matrix. With each capability, and then a little bit more detail about the pains that solves.
So you've got pretty much a solution, capability, and pains that it addresses.
Mm-hmm.
And then when you guys are communicating your email, your nurturing campaigns, you're using this messaging and these bullets from the matrix.
Right, right.
Love it.
That's
okay.
Right. Yep. So let's see. So the next part of of the whole email process was to take some of this content and start to build a story over time, because the first emails were just kind of, okay, we think this is a compelling message. We can refer to, this data breach statistic or whatever, and this is interesting. But they were kind of one-off emails. And so we built our first, at the end of the year last year, we built our first drip campaign. And we spent some time thinking about if people read this and they were still interested, this would be the next thing. And the next thing, we tried to build a story and a progression of content as we lead people down this path. And so we still are only one. When we talk about baby steps, this is our that was our first baby step, was to just do one product focused.
Actually, Jamie, I'm going to rename this, because you've been taking giant steps and a lot of them. So,
yeah,
okay.
There are a lot of. We just know that where we want to be, and we're not there yet. So that's why they feel like baby steps to us, because you can never move as fast as you want to. But this first nurture campaign has taught us a lot too about what people respond to, and what we need to how we need to further branch people off once they do respond, and what would be the next step. So like I said, we're single threaded right now with our one. Our one nurture stream, but we're right now in the process of building some other ones, and they're basically going to be built on interest level. So the first nurture stream is very much an awareness type level, where we're talking about the pains and do you have this problem? Have you considered these things in terms of solving the problem? And then if they respond to one of those, then they get bumped down to the next level, where we start talking about evaluation and if you are looking at a data security platform, the kinds of things that you need to look for. And we still have some gaps in that content. We've built out the map of what we want, but we still have some holes in that, and we're working on, you know, a plan to fill those content gaps right now.
And Jamie, how many people are on your marketing team?
We have myself and then a program manager. We have a copywriter, and then we have our PR person. So four
That's
of
it.
Us.
Mm-hmm. That's it. And you're doing all this.
Yeah.
Okay, got it. Okay. All right, so let's talk a little bit more about your nurturing campaigns because, again, you know, it's just an area of great interest. And so, for example, in the awareness campaign that you guys built and launched this time a year ago, tell me about how many touches total are in that campaign.
Well, the funny thing is we kind of joke about how that's the campaign that never ends because it's
gotcha.
The only one we have right now. So
okay, gotcha.
So it probably has had about 12 steps to it so far, and.
Okay.
And it is very educational though. I mean it's not promotional at all. And we've had really good success with certain pieces that we've sent out, you know, and not so much interest in other pieces, and that's helped educate us on what we think you know, we want to do as we break this apart into other ones.
I think that makes a lot of sense. And again, that's an easy way to get started. And I always like to tell people, you know, depending on, you know, again, where you are, what kind of company, but I think being educational in the market is just a really great strategy. Do you have any, before I do that, so that was the awareness, and now you're building campaigns out based on interest level. So when will those be launched?
Well, it's our goal. We have the flow chart, the big flow chart that's on my whiteboard that I'm looking at right now. so we have our plan, and we are just now trying to figure out, because we've got places where we have a piece to fill the piece that we're looking for, and then we have some case studies and some things that still need to be written. And so we're hoping that January 1 we'll be able to launch the second one. So the first one is kind of it will become the awareness drip. And then the second one is what we're calling the discovery drip, which is really more evaluation. Once people realize that they do have a problem and they are going to be looking for a solution, then what can we do to help educate them about the different solutions and why ours is better?
Love it. I think that's absolutely brilliant. And again, you're tying your campaigns to where people are in their buying process and aligning the content that they would find valid for that. And if they look at that content, you can surmise kind of where they are in their buying process. So I think that's absolutely brilliant. So people always love to ask me, how often do you send out an email in a nurturing campaign?
Yeah, and this is a debate that we go back and forth on all the time, and we've learned where we get excited. You know, we've had, because our drip, we were kind of, at some point, we were kind of just running ahead of the cart, you know, putting another piece before the drip campaign ran out, before the time, you know, we didn't have anything else to send, and we were just adding pavement as people were coming down the sidewalk. So and sometimes we felt like we did put things maybe a little too close together and we would see the response drop off. But when people come into our current campaign now, they end up in the drip in several ways. They could have downloaded something from our website, which automatically, as an automation rule in Pardot, automatically adds them to our drip. Or they could have been added by one of our PMC inside sales folks, or they could have attended an event or a webinar and been added manually by our program manager. So there's a lot of ways they could have ended up in the drip. So once they get there, we wait 7 days, and then they get the first piece. We wait another 7 days, and we send the second piece. And if they still haven't responded or downloaded anything, I think it's 6 weeks on the third piece. We wait 6 weeks and we send the third piece, and then it's just a once a month, like I said, very educational. We've had and it's once a month from there on out, because we, you know, try to get them at first, and if they don't respond, then we're going to just back off and send them something once a month, and we. you know, we have very few people opt out, so we feel like we aren't being too obnoxious because we've had pretty good luck with people dropping off. We're keeping folks in that stream.
I think that's excellent. That's absolutely excellent. So, now, are you guys doing lead scoring?
We want to, and we're working on that. We're working through some agreement issues and what we think the scoring should be. But yes, by the end of the year, we will have scoring in. And what if we go back to that demand waterfall? What scoring is actually going to allow us to do is better disseminate which MQLs go to our inside sales guys first, because right now it's kind of just first in, first out. But if we had a little bit better insight into actually who these people are and how they fit our preferred profile, those guys would, you know, bubble up and be pushed to the inside sales guys first.
Yeah, absolutely. I can positively see that. So speaking of PMC and the sales, you know, a lot of times when marketing begins a demand generation / revenue marketing initiative, you know, sales is just like, okay, whatever, kind of go do your thing. What does your sales team think about the quality of leads that you deliver to them?
Well, I think that they, you know, they're never going to say, I've ever known any salesperson that's 100% thrilled with every lead that they receive from marketing. But I can definitely say that we have a great chemistry with the sales team. They work together with us. We've sent them enough big successes that have resulted in some really nice wins that we have good credibility with them, and they know that that we are working very hard to make that quality increase all the time, and they are part of that because we have discussions with them, you know, every week in the sales meetings, and then also PMC and sales are aligned. They're assigned to each other, so two salespeople for each PMC rep, and so those guys talk back and forth about what's working and what's not. So it's a very collaborative process, and not a whole lot of finger pointing. I mean, I think they really feel like we're all in this together, and that we've made huge strides in, you know, where we were a year and a half ago.
Okay. Now, so let's talk about metrics for a minute. What kind of metrics do you track, Jamie, and what kind of metrics have you guys been able to achieve? What can you share with us?
Okay. Well, you know, our metrics is still a huge, you know, a huge area where we want to continue to get better. We currently have a pretty manual dashboard that we that's just really an Excel spreadsheet. And at this point, it's still pretty tactical. You know, it's still just showing lots of numbers in terms of responses and in terms of net. Detailed, granular, I had 64 people show up to this webinar, you know, that kind of thing, and comparing that quarter by quarter, month by month, and year over year. So we're looking at the change over time. We're also looking at some goals. We had a goal to increase everything by 25% over 2009 in terms of total lead volume, and then we have some product goals as well, that we wanted to increase the number of leads for certain products more than others because we have focus on certain products. And so we measure those each month. And so every month this dashboard comes out and we just all sit down and look at it and see where the trends are. One thing that we were able to do that I think is pretty amazing is we've already met our annual goal. We've already exceeded 25%.
Congratulations.
So that was kind of cool. That happened about a month ago. So we were able to you know, definitely generate more leads than last year. And the really interesting thing is that was with a 25% marketing budget cut from last year.
Wow.
So and I think that some of that is definitely the spillover. You know, it takes some people. I mean, some of those people were in the drip and they've been in the drip for a while. So some of that is the goodness that was done in 2009 that's caused them to, you know, finally fall into the funnel now. It's overall it's been 245% increase in the volume of inquiries that we've had year over year with the 25% smaller.
That's amazing.
Marketing
budget. Do you have to be careful with that, Jamie, or they'll cut your budget again this next year and say,
well,
okay, do more again?
Well, that's why I added that caveat that I think a lot of this goodness is coming from 2009 because it's not, we can't continue to have that kind of momentum if the budget continues to get smaller. And the good news is that I think a lot of this it has, and a lot of marketing data that I've been pulling has said that that marketing organizations, B2B marketing organizations, are planning on increasing their budget from 2010 by I think it was about 8%.
Yeah.
For 2011. So just a small increase, but still a better size budget in 2011 than they had in 2010. So I'm armed with all that and ready to go into my budget meeting.
But you probably also saw some reallocation too, maybe away from spending on traditional things and more toward online.
Absolutely, absolutely. We cut out a couple of big events. I mean, some places where we could, make some big reductions quickly. Because we were kind of told midstream that our budget was going to be, it wasn't for the whole year, it was actually reduced midstream. So we had a bigger budget in the first half than we did in the second half. So, we backed out of a few events.
How do you create a culture of metrics? Because that's not typically what marketers do.
No, it's not. And I have to go back again to to the executive sponsorship. And really, in this case, it's our CEO. He is a sales guy now and has been a sales guy for many, many years. But he was a mathematician at the beginning of his career. He was a mathematics major in college.
Oh, my gosh. So hey, everybody, I know who she's talking about. I have no idea. He was trained in math. Okay, interesting.
And he loves numbers. So we've got a CEO who is very, very interested in the numbers, and he looks at Salesforce.com every day. And this is the beautiful thing, because in the past when I've been at companies where we've had Salesforce.com in place but nobody was using it, and I used to keep saying, if I could just build that report that made the CEO's eyes light up, we'd be golden. That's all it would take, because then everybody would be using it. And that's the situation that we have here. He lives by Salesforce.com. He's always in there running his own reports and everything, and that will do a lot to get people on board. So
that is so interesting. So, well, you're right. I mean, it starts at the top, and I always tell people, as a marketer, if you think this is a good idea and you're the only one that thinks it's a good idea, chances are you may get something bought, but you're really not going to have success with it. And I think you have come back to your executive sponsorship at least three, if not four times during this interview. So, again, it is absolutely positively critical. Now, one of the things that you told me early on is that when you got hired for this position, one of the reasons was because you had experience or background with Salesforce. Was it also because you had a background in demand generation as well?
Oh yeah, I mean that was really what this role really, really needed, was somebody that was going to come in and understand Salesforce.com, but also extend that capability over into marketing so that it was one fluid process and we were able to measure it, from top to bottom of the funnel.
Okay, so now I have a question for you, and I did send this to you in advance, but people love to hear biggest failures. So is there a story along your revenue marketing journey that you'd like to share?
Oh my gosh. There's probably several. I would think that probably my biggest failure probably was Salesforce.com, was a Salesforce.com situation where I stood on my head, a very, very small company, where I just stood on my head and begged for the funds to get Salesforce.com licensed and in place, and I was the only person in the company that was on board with this. And,
oh, no.
And after spending a couple of weekends at my kitchen table, literally going into records and trying to fix the data myself because I did not have any help or any support or any budget to get any help, I kind of had one of those, head on the kitchen table moments where I said, I cannot fix this all on my own. It's just never going to happen. And I went in to try to once again pitch the VP of sales on why we should, you know, allocate some money to fix this. And he basically said, I'm perfectly happy with a spreadsheet. And I was like, okay, well, I guess then I either need to get on the program with a spreadsheet or find a new opportunity.
But you know, it's true, and we see that specifically as it relates to marketing automation and demand generation. Again, if a marketer is the only one that gets excited about it, if that early collaboration, buy-in, and participation is not there, you're just not going to be successful with it, because any technology that you bring into marketing, whether it's a marketing automation system or tools or whatever, again, if it's not used, if it's not adopted, you've just really wasted your money. So I think that's a really, really great question. So Jamie, and when you and I had lunch, gosh, I guess it was about a month ago or so now, you know, and you and I were talking, and we call this program today Baby Steps. I after listening to you now, I definitely would not call it Baby Steps. I'd call it Giant Steps. But it seems to me that a lot of the really good demand generation revenue marketers that I talk to, they do have a perception that they're moving too slow and that they're behind. So why don't you talk about that for a few minutes?
Okay. Well, I think one of the things that really got to me, coming back to serious decisions again, there are those folks really do have, I think, have their finger on the pulse of where we're going as revenue marketers. And when I went to that conference this past year and saw what some of the companies were doing, that's when I think I really realized how far we have to go. And I do have to temper that and say, you know, I do realize that some of these folks had been working on this, you know, this process for 3 years, and it doesn't happen overnight.
That's right. It doesn't.
So, you do have to be patient, but patience is difficult for me, and probably for a lot of us marketers. We want things to happen right away, and so but we do now, I think, have a more structured and realistic plan for where we want to be. We do have some milestones. So our next goal, we have some basic metrics in place now, and I would say our next goal is to be able to more easily, we're talking about bringing in a business intelligence tool, and the one that we're looking at, I'll just share with you, is a company called Good Data, because they are affordable and seems to be a very easy drag-and-drop interface for marketing folks to use. And it will pull our Salesforce.com data and our Pardot data together into one database, because as anybody who's out there use Salesforce knows that the reporting capabilities, you know, leave a bit to be desired. So when you try to add marketing data to that, it just is pretty much you're working on Excel. So,
oh, yeah. So, Jamie, we have about 1 minute left, and I want you to tell the people listening some advice. If you're a new revenue marketer, what's the top three things they need to think about or do?
I would say, probably not surprisingly, I would say the first thing I would do is if you don't understand where your boss or your boss's boss stands on the importance of being able to put some measurement around marketing, I would find that out first. And then if you're just sitting there looking at a lot of different possibilities and where to invest, I mean, for me, marketing automation has allowed us to do so much with very little investment money-wise, and we can put at the volume of activity that we put out because of marketing automation, and the number of people we're able to reach is just amazing to me, you know, with a very, very small team. And then the third thing is just, you know, do it. We have this meeting every Friday now, Marketing by the Numbers, every Friday, because it makes us sit down and it makes us look at the numbers we have. And I think just set a meeting and just do it.
I love that advice. Just, you know, help from the top, you know, act like a big group by using marketing automation with little investment and marketing by the numbers. I absolutely love it. Well, Jamie, you have been absolutely awesome today. You've given us a great level of detail, many, many, many stories, many ideas that I think people can absolutely walk away with. So thank you so much for being on the show today.
Sure. Thanks for having me.
And next week we'll have Building Engines, and our topic will be the brand new revenue marketer. This is truly a company who's just embraced marketing automation, and it'll be their very beginning of their journey. So thanks for listening, everybody, and have a great week.